Chapter 1. The Mission Begins. 1845 to 1938. The founder of the Maris brothers was a French Maris priest, Marcelin Champagne, 1789 to 1840. We know from Champagne's letters and life story that he himself felt a keen desire to travel with his confreres to the distant lands of Oceania to work as a missionary. In fact, he volunteered for this work, which Pope Gregory XVI assigned to the Maris group in 1836. Marcelin's life story tells us he wanted to devote his last days and little remaining strength to the people of Oceania. Bishop Pompellier and his group of Marists left France in December 1836, just a few years before Marcelin's death. At that time, the founder was fully occupied in trying to obtain government recognition for his fast-growing institute and caring for more than 170 brothers spread throughout 34 establishments in 5 dioceses. By that time, too, his health was deteriorating. Reluctantly, he accepted the advice of his superior, Father Collin, who asked him to stay in France with his brothers rather than go to Oceania. Instead, Champagne selected 3 of his brothers to accompany the first Marist fathers to the Pacific, and in 1838 and 1839 he sent 6 more brothers to the Marist Oceania missions. Over the following 20 years, 34 Marist brothers worked in the scattered outposts of the Pacific. Marcelin's correspondence to Bishop Pompellier and his regular mention of the missionary work in his letters to the brothers show Marcelin's passion to bring the message of the gospel to new lands. "Our plans include all the dioceses of the world," he wrote in 1837. The founder died in 1840. Problems faced by the early Marists and the missionaries depart. The founder, with all the French Marists, was enthusiastic about the Oceania project. Yet, in Western Oceania, the mission had a catastrophic beginning, resulting in the withdrawal of the Marists from the Solomons in 1847, less than 2 years after their arrival. A combination of tropical diseases and disastrous relationships with the local people forced the eventual evacuation of the few sick missionaries who had survived the ravages of malaria and hostilities with the villagers. During their brief presence in the region, they established temporary missions on San Cristobal, Solomons, Woodlark Island, Muyu, near the Trobriands in what is now Milne Bay province of Papua New Guinea, and Rook Island, Umboy, in what is now Morobe province of Papua New Guinea. The Marists left Woodlark in November 1853. Woodlark and Rook Island missions struggled on for a further 3 years with Italian missionaries, but they too were beaten by malaria and their inability to form successful relationships with the islanders. With the advantage of hindsight, we can see the tragic waste of that failed first mission, no doubt motivated by deep faith in the gospel imperative to evangelize the world, but tarnished by colonialism and a belief that our people in Melanesia were inferior and primitive. Several missionaries fell victim to violent acts, provoked by a desire to protect land, customs, and traditional beliefs, or in retaliation for perceived wrongs. It was only when the authentic Marist vision of equality, respect, and good relationships prevailed that the missionaries found they were welcome in these lands. It was a hard-learned lesson. The First Brothers, Death and Other Disasters. Among the first Marist brothers to set foot in what is now Solomon Islands and Papua New Guinea were brothers Hyacinthe Châtelet, Jeannard Rollin, Aristide Brun and Optar Begillon. It is uncertain whether Brother Optar was one of Champagne's teaching brothers, FMS, or a coadjutor brother with the Society of Mary, SM. Either way, his story is worth telling. Now, since I wrote that, several brothers have written to me and told me that Brother Optat was indeed an FMS brother, one of Champagne's brothers. These were among the group of seven priests, four Maris brothers, FMS, and two SM brothers, under the leadership of Bishop Epal, SM, who left London in February 1845 for Sydney, Australia, on the way to Solomon Islands. 10 days after arriving, Epal was dead, killed on Santa Isabel Island on 16 December 1845. Epal's missionaries had befriended and traded with one group of islanders. Then, unfortunately, they ignored advice that they should not immediately approach a nearby rival group. That group killed Bishop Epal with an axe when his party landed near their village some days later. The Sydney Province Necrology records that Brother Jannard was in the landing party with Epal when he was attacked, but that is not supported by other historians. All four of our FMS brothers probably remained on the ship, the Marion Watson, anchored nearby but out of sight. 16 months later, on 20 April 1847, Brother Hyacinth, with two priests, was killed also by axe on St. Christabel Island, where the missionaries had opened their first mission after Bishop Epal's death. After the evacuation from St. Christabel in September 1847, Brothers Optat, Jannard, and Aristide helped to set up the short-lived mission on Woodlark Island. Later, Optat was transferred to Rook Island, where Bishop Colombe, SM, Epal's replacement, and Father Villion, SM, contracted malaria and died, leaving Optat and Father Fremont alone, until they were evacuated back to Woodlark in May 1849. Woodlark was not a happy place for our FMS brothers, indeed for any of the missionaries there. In June 1849, Aristide returned to Sydney after a long-running quarrel with the superior, Father Montrusier, SM, who, in the face of failure to befriend the islanders, imposed a stricter monastic timetable on his already discouraged and sick brothers. Montrusier's rule was oppressive and, in the situation, inhumane. On one occasion, he refused to give out any food except bananas for 10 days as a penance. Optat's reaction to Montrusier's regime was to go walkabout. It was not long before he was attracted to some of the local young girls. Montrusier reacted by building a great fence around the house to keep the girls away. Apparently his plan was not successful. Finally, Optat too returned to Sydney in September 1850, leaving Jannard as the last FMS in the region. Jannard left Woodlark in 1852. Did they come for the wrong reasons? The religious motivation of the early missionaries is undoubted, but perhaps it was misguided. From the Vatican down, there was an unholy haste to establish the true faith in the islands before the arrival of the heretics, Protestant missionaries. The Maris Bishop of Fiji wrote in 1891 that the Maris should consider an early return to the Solomons for, quote, fear of seeing the Protestants go first to plough their furrow in the soil soaked with the blood of Marist martyrs, end quote. The race for souls was on. The early missionaries had learned from the Council of Trent that outside the church there is no salvation. They did not have the benefit of the more informed insights of Vatican Council II, which was to reform the Church a century later. This ugly competition between the various Christian denominations, and to a lesser extent between the different nationalities and religious orders within the Catholic Church, continued over the following decades. The missionaries' haste to beat the Protestants and their zeal to evangelize the islanders showed little understanding of the huge practical problems they were likely to encounter in Melanesia. Their complete ignorance of Melanesian culture was of little concern to them. The early Marists' understanding of the purpose of mission was primarily that it was a means of perpetual sanctification. The missionaries' daily timetable was determined by their almost monastic prayer schedule, allowing only short visits to the villages. The difficulties encountered were often welcomed as a means of personal holiness. In line with the spirituality of the time, some even had a desire to die as a martyr. In all of this, one wonders where the best interests of the islanders fitted into the complex mix of questionable motivations: following and supporting colonial empires, promoting Roman Catholicism and minimizing the growth of other churches, the personal spiritual growth of the missionaries, and for some, the lure of a perceived adventurous missionary life in exotic lands on the other side of the world. These comments do not detract from the sterling work done by the Marist Fathers on their return to this part of the Pacific. Both in Solomon Islands and Bougainville, Marist Fathers, sisters and brothers have a long history of working together. Over more than a century, the Marist priests, assisted by the brothers and Marist missionary sisters, have given the church on Bougainville and elsewhere a distinct and authentic marial character. In spite of the inauspicious beginning, the Marists have the distinction of being the founders of the Western Oceania Mission, and in later years established extensive education and health services, as well as ministering to spiritual needs. Unlike other groups, they never established huge central mission headquarters, preferring to put more of their personnel into remote areas, a strategy which was successful in Bougainville and Solomon Islands. Blackbirding in the Solomons. Missionary work in the Solomons and elsewhere was indirectly handicapped by the practice known as blackbirding, which began in the 1860s. Between 1863 and 1904, 19,000 Solomon Islanders, along with Bougainvillians, Vanuatuans, and other Pacific Islanders, were recruited by unscrupulous traders and ship captains, often by force, to leave their homeland to work on the sugar plantations of northern Queensland. It is estimated that 63,000 Pacific Islanders were shipped to Queensland in that period, and many suffered in harsh conditions under tyrannical and unjust plantation owners. While contributing enormously to the wealth of the young Queensland colony, the recruits received small wages, or in some cases, no wage at all. Some people have said that the so-called labour trade offered many advantages to the islanders. Furthermore, some church people, especially evangelicals, hold the view that it was a Christianizing influence. It is true that many workers went to Queensland willingly, and some were looked on as men of status by those back in the Solomons. It is clear, however, that many were ill-informed, and the damage done by the trade far outweighed any benefits. The Queensland government's own investigation into this human trade concluded that blackbirding was, quote, a terrible indictment of deceit, cruelty, treachery, deliberate kidnapping and cold-blooded murder, end of quote. That's from the Royal Commission in 1885. While not directly part of our Marist story, this shameful part of colonial history influenced the early relationship between Australia and the Solomons and partly explains the suspicion the islanders had towards Europeans during early missionary times. Another beginning. The Marist Fathers returned to the Solomons in 1898. Four priests, a brother and some catechist, landed on Ruasura near Guadalcanal and, amid great difficulties, began their mission. The growth of that work is a story in itself. Their success second time round can be attributed to the growing familiarity of islanders with visiting traders, to the fact that missionaries had had more experience in Melanesia, and to an ample supply of quinine. By the time our brothers arrived, 40 years later, the Marist Fathers had established thriving missions at several locations around Guadalcanal and other islands. Marist Fathers also began missions in nearby Bougainville. They began at Tunuru, just north of Kieta, in central Bougainville in 1901, founding a mission base at nearby Tubiana, Rigu, in 1904. They expanded from there to several locations along the coast, both northwards and southwards. By the turn of the century, vigorous mission stations had opened throughout what was to become Papua New Guinea. British New Guinea in the south, Papua, had a mission station on Yule Island, conducted by the missionaries of the Sacred Heart, who were already established near Rabaul in New Britain. The Divine Word missionaries, who moved their headquarters to Alexishafen, near Madang, in 1905, served German New Guinea in the north. Like Vunapope near Rabaul, Alexishafen was to develop into a huge mission complex. In all four of these major centres of church activity, Bougainville, Rabaul, Alexishafen, and Yule Island, the early 1900s was a period of consolidation and growth. Relationships with the local people improved, and the missionaries slowly developed a better understanding of the cultures in which they worked. Local people were trained as catechists, an initiative which became an essential part of the church's missionary plan. During this period, the mission schools, catechist training centres, and medical services began to flourish. Significantly, the missionaries learned and used local languages in their work. Similar developments were occurring in the church in Solomon Islands. An invitation to the Australians. This expansion of church activity created a demand for more religious. In 1935, the newly appointed Marist Vicar Apostolic of the Solomons, Bishop Jean-Marie Aubin, sought teaching brothers to staff his school at Marau on Guadalcanal, already functioning under the leadership of Father Moore, SM. While in New Zealand for his consecration, Bishop Aubin met the Marist Brothers New Zealand Provincial, who advised him to write to the Superior General in Rome to ask for brothers. As a result, the Australian province, led at that time by Brother Andrew Power, was asked to supply brothers for Solomon Islands mission. When Andrew asked for mission volunteers from his province, a large number responded, from whom he selected brothers John William Roberts, director, James Thrift, sub-director, and Ephraim Stevens to open the first Marist Brothers community in Solomon Islands. The term director refers to the leader of the community. All three generously accepted the invitation and were excited at the prospect of being the pioneers in this significant step, which would eventually lead to the establishment of the district of Papua New Guinea, Solomon Islands. They had no idea of the adventures, the joys, the challenges, the hardships, and the sacrifices that lay ahead.